Hi, this is Susan Smith Nash, and I'm here with a few thoughts on e-learning, and today on podcasting. So this is really talking about using podcasts, a strategy for effective e-learning, and I think of it as a way to fight intrusive thoughts using podcasts. And you're saying, wow, that's an interesting concept. How on earth can podcasts be used to combat intrusive thoughts? And I'd say, well, we'll talk about that, but I'd like to point out first that podcasts can be part of a very effective self-regulatory strategy. And it's a strategy that also accommodates multiple learning styles while overcoming the intrusive thoughts and the attendant anxiety. So as a result, academic performance can improve and self-concepts can improve, as well as one's sense of self-efficacy. One's self-efficacy can increase. So I can say, well, the bottom line is, while the traditional classroom can be a place where learners engage in conversations, they debate, they do all these nonverbal transactions, and you know, in the traditional classroom, all that mediation essentially is what helps people stay engaged, and the intrusive thoughts are not quite as likely to come in, primarily because there are all those other faculties being engaged, not just visual. So the interesting thing about the online environment or the distance environment is that it's sort of the converse of the classroom experience, which is to say that instead of warding off intrusive thoughts and the activities that lead to intrusive thoughts, the online experience can actually trigger intrusive thoughts because there's kind of isolation, social isolation. There can be a lack of engagement with a community of practice. And also, the highly text-based or visual learning environment can leave the auditory channels just totally unused. So, in essence, the distance learning concept, you know, the environment, the learning environment can keep the individual from being fully engaged with respect to multiple learning styles. And that's, again, because of the preponderance of data coming in the visual area. Another thing, too, is that any anxiety that is produced by isolation or frustration due to ambiguities in expectations and performance can also even trigger unwanted mental intrusions. So, it's sort of a chain reaction, a grass fire of sorts, a mental grass fire of these undesired thoughts sparking a chain reaction of cause and effect responses to the intrusive thoughts, and it's exacerbated as the individual tries to combat them and also starts feeling anxiety about experiencing the thoughts. So let's step back and ask, what are intrusive thoughts anyway? So let me ask you, are you having any intrusive thoughts right now? and if you are, what are they about? Are they about coffee? Are they about how hungry that you are, or just, you know, wanting some kind of distraction? You know, some things are intrusive thoughts and some are just simply distractors. Distractors are different because they're something that's outside and there's probably something that's really happening. For example, a donut being waved in front of your face. Krispy Kreme. Ugh. That's a distraction, huh? But on the other hand, you can be sitting in a nice, quiet environment like I am, and suddenly be besieged by all these, like, unwanted thoughts. What are these thoughts of? I mean, they can be flashbacks of sorts to traumatic incidences. They can be kind of compulsive response type thoughts, like self-talk. It's really negative. You will fail, you big thing, you. That's not a very good thought. But if that's sort of the nature of intrusive thoughts. Another set can involve family members. So this mother's voice, "You are so naughty," saying that over and over, when there's no reason for you to feel naughty or think that you've been naughty. Anyway, they can also be related to work-related worry and social pressure. Strauss wrote in 1969 that intrusive thoughts, even auditory hallucinations, are normal. They're just normal. They're a normal psychological phenomenon, and it falls well within the range of ordinary human experience. Nevertheless, the disturbing nature of the thoughts, coupled with the fact that they are unwanted, can lead to negative beliefs about the thoughts. So, of course, you know, again, this is sort of this negative spiral of cause and effect, chain reaction. Intrusive thoughts are exacerbated by negative beliefs about intrusive thoughts, and then negative beliefs start spilling over to oneself in response to the thoughts. Ironically, thought control strategies often backfire and engender or propagate even more intrusive thoughts, leading to unwanted intrusive thoughts about the unwanted intrusive thoughts. You're going, "Stop, stop, I don't want to know anymore." What they can call that meta-worry. So it's like worrying about worrying. S. Cartwright Hatton and A. Wells found that there's a relationship between worry and negative beliefs about intrusive thoughts. This translates to a fear of intrusive thoughts can be, in essence, paralyzing. An effective strategy for breaking the cycle of intrusive thoughts is to have a method for intervening, countervailing them with cognitive engagement. The intrusive thoughts can be that way minimized, or they can even be eliminated just by focusing and maintaining attention on a cognitively engaging activity, such as, you guessed it, listening to a podcast. And so the most effective of this is like listening while you're doing something with your body. So that way you bring about the sort of kinesthetic learning as well. So you like cue yourself. So if you're like typing with your fingers and listening, that's just a huge, huge reinforcer. M. Chung et al. In 2005 found that the number and intensity of intrusive thoughts suffered by those diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder is directly related to the intensity of the traumatic incident. Further, the two researchers found that the individual's age made no difference in the nature of the intrusive thoughts. Young and elderly alike experienced similar levels of intrusive thoughts, depending on the nature of the traumatic incident that led to them in the first place. Thus, extremely traumatic events are good predictors of the presence of intrusive thoughts, and it can be assumed that anyone who has experienced violent, traumatizing, disturbing incidences will possess a certain likelihood of having unwanted mental intrusions, regardless of age. J. Walker and J. Boyce Tillman in 2002 examined the role of focused conversation, concentration and auditory channels in self-regulation in cases where children suffered from anxiety. Specifically, they studied the impact of music lessons and whether or not the children were able to develop self-regulatory strategies that involved a combination of auditory and kinesthetic engagement. Well, I don't want to spoil it for you, but I will. The results of the study were that, yes, music is good. Learning how to play music and engage in auditory activity as well as kinesthetic, so you're combining the auditory and kinesthetic, is exceedingly powerful at building people's self-efficacy, their belief that they can get something, do something, influence the world around them. And it's also, in my opinion, a way where one can get a sense of accomplishment. So, to recap, using podcasts in e-learning can, one, spark interest, stimulate connections, and by doing that, that helps set up ideal conditions for learning. Gagné's findings on the conditions of learning are really helpful here. Two, it can help podcasts can help accommodate different learning styles and preferences by providing auditory learners a way to organize meaning. It can be in conjunction with a physical activity, typing, walking, taking notes, which can help the kinesthetic learners as well. Let's look at Gardner and Kolb's theories. Those really apply here. So just think about it. How many times have you heard of a person listening to things from that relate to his or her educational obligations as they're wandering around with, you know, a little earbud in their ear and a tiny cute little podcast, cute little iPod in their pocket? So number three, podcasts can motivate learners by building self-efficacy. So we can look at Bandura's theories. Four, they can block or replace intrusive thoughts and help assuage anxiety. Deming's findings are helpful here. Podcasts can help forge connections between different things. They can forge connections between an abstract concept and real life, particularly if the learner is able to listen to the podcast while actually being in the environment to which the concepts that the person is listening to relate. So, you know, listening to podcasts on growing chrysanthemums while walking through a greenhouse. I like that idea. Imagine you're listening to your podcasts and they're talking about growing chrysanthemums. In the meantime, you are wandering through a greenhouse and you're walking and you're thinking, what a reinforcer. So in this case, Cole's theories are quite illuminating. Finally, I'd like to say that for those who have suffered traumatic incidences resulting in anxiety, or if they've been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder or syndrome, and if they have unwanted mental intrusions, podcasts can be highly effective, a godsend in fact, because they give the learners hope, hope just when they were about to give up all hope of the transforming power of education. So, I mean, it's really nice to think about the podcast. I love doing them. I love listening to them. And it's thrilling to see that it could be used in education. I've really enjoyed being here in your ear, in your mind, in your consciousness. It's been a pleasure. And please email me. Take care. You are fabulous. Fabulous. This is Susan Smith Nash. You've been listening to Thoughts on E-Learning.